L-E-D-E-N-E-T.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program from NFLBlueBook.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gents? How you doing today?
Are we how are we Super. Holding up throughout the training camp tour?
I'm a week from the end of it. So yeah, I'm actually in Ashburn. I was at Ashburn, Virginia. I was in Commander's Camp yesterday. So coming up on the tail end of it, and looking forward to getting home and starting to write a lot of the stuff that I've collected and just not had time to do since I'm running from one place to the next.
Did you have any number 5 on your person yesterday? No. Any shirt that had the number 5 on it? Did Jaden Daniels give you a stink eye if you looked at him that way? Like, what'd you think of all that?
Yeah, that was a weird, that whole deal. It's funny because, you know, you talk to people inside the team and they're just like, it clearly was one of those things that just came out of left field, that whole dispute. And they're definitely hanging it on, you know, Jaden's kind of surrounding camp, and you know, they're like, look, dude's busy, he's at camp, he's, you know, he's concentrating on football. Like, that's other people who are making, you know, raising issues and creating problems. And I think clearly now that's kind of moved past a little bit, the you know, commanders internally are like, something like that happened again. It was definitely a distraction, at least momentarily in camp. And, you know, it's just a weird, I'm telling you, you go through these camps and they'll tell you all kinds of little weird things. That obviously is a very high profile one, but you know, they'll tell you things that pop up out of nowhere that are unexpected. And you know, when you went through Vikings camp, I was talking to somebody there and they're like, you know, we're just kind of sitting minding our own business. And then the Diana Rossini, you know, mentions Kevin O'Connell at a, you know, a stop for a traffic ticket. Like, and all of a sudden we're getting calls about that. And we're like, what are we doing? We're not doing anything. We don't have anything to do with any of this. Like, why are we getting dragged into this? So yeah, it's always interesting to kind of hear the sideshows or the little, you know, mini fires that organizations are trying to put out that you don't sometimes hear about them, sometimes you don't.
Like when Jaden makes a good play and someone wants a high five him, do they put the thumb in like, high four, Jaden?
Oh, stop.
He was really proud of that one, too.
All right.
That was building up.
I'm glad I retract that joke. Okay.
So, Charles, I don't know how much you got a chance to see Cam Ward's performance last week. It was not good. He was 5 of 12, 57 yards, some inaccuracy along the way.
Yep.
For the most part, it sounds like practices have gone pretty well for him. What we've seen in the game, I think, has raised a lot of concern for Titans fans here. So what do you make of kind of that and the discussion around him right now, which is basically around here, like, is he ever going to be – accurate enough to be, you know, a franchise quarterback in the NFL?
Well, you're happy it happened in, obviously, preseason, because it gives you an opportunity to try to fix, you know, that inaccuracy. But I mean, a lot of that is, it's just decision making, and they're going to have to structurally figure out, you know, ways to, I think, give him some wins in early reps and, you know, hope that he can build on that and continue to, you know, make the right decisions as he goes through games. But when I went through there, I mean, that was certainly a topic of conversation when I sat down with someone in the organization about, and we talked, you know, at length about Cam and just getting that level of consistency where, you know, his thought processes. And I think I talked to you about this last week, Robbie, you know, take the layups. You know, it's okay to still still do the off-script stuff. It's okay to be aggressive, but let's make sure you have a base of layups that you work through first, and then, you know, we'll limit the shots that you take and try to make them a little higher quality. That's not unlike what Brian Daboll went through, you know, with Josh Allen. They're not the same player, certainly. Not the same arm strength, not the same mobility. But, you know, Josh went through several years of, you know, refining that decision-making process and not trying to, you know, take lower percentage throws and you know, just take the things that Daboll was engineering for him to have some simplicity in his game. But I, you know, it's not great. Obviously it's worrisome because you're like, is this now become a trend? Because we've seen it in the past with Cam, and it's not year two for him. This is supposed to be a very pivotal, you know, when you jump from, you know, year one to year two, and then, you know, you got to see a step. That's the bottom line. I guess you put it on Daboll and you just expect that he's going to have his program and his progression and whatever the plan is. Ultimately, you know, you're just going to have to grin and bear it until he can get through it. So, I mean, do you guys sense panic? I mean, in the organization, I mean, when I went through, and obviously when I say it's not year two for him, it's not year two of Cam having to learn to, you know, take the smaller. He went through this in college too. I mean, he came out of Miami, you know, every time he went through the portal and he graduated to the next step, you know, that was always a conversation about you can make the big plays and the splash stuff, but you got to learn how to be a little more conservative. And even through the draft process, I think teams told him that.
No, I mean, the entire town of Nashville is panicking, but it's fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. No, but I mean, in all seriousness, yeah, you know, I'd say that as preseason games go, it'd be good more outside, you know, more from the fan perspective, but I think it'd be good. It'd probably be good for him though, too, you know, confidence wise to like string together some good plays and in front of the home crowd Sunday, you know, I mean,
it's, and I think they're trying to do that with him. I do, you know, I think that is a goal in this camp, is to try to string together good plays and string together some consistency. But I'll say this, you know, it does take time for guys, if even guys that are able to rewire, you know, how they go through their progressions and pulling it back a little bit. I don't know that that's really like a 1-year process. And remember, he's already going through two different staffs. Like, this is only his second year in the NFL and he's already had that changeover. So, this is, you know, his first year with Brian and his first off season with Brian, and it may take time. And I know there's a lot of anxiety that goes into that, but the fact is, like, what if Cam ends up being like a 65%, you know, completion percentage guy, but you can limit his turnovers. I think that's fine. I think you can win Super Bowls with that kind of player. And I don't know that he's that far from it, but there's a big difference between being a 59-60% passer and a 65% passer who makes better decisions.
Well, and I think too, Charles, like, you know, it happened on the same night. And again, I completely understand that we're talking about NFL preseason games here, so let's keep that in mind. But it came on the same night of, you know, Mendoza looking pretty good for the Raiders. And I know you've gone through Raiders camp and you've talked to, you know, to people about Mendoza and maybe him potentially making a decision pretty interesting there when it comes to him and Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, that kind of all going on at the same time. So, I guess built off that, what do you make of kind of the progress you've seen from or you've heard about from Mendoza to this point?
Well, and this is what's funny about when we look at this. They're both facing, particularly when you go through the first, you know, preseason game, you're facing not much, right? You're not – the defenses aren't throwing everything out there at all. It's the most basic level stuff. So that's what's concerning, is that you see a guy like Mendoza who goes out there, and again, he didn't go out with the ones, you know, he went out in the second wave, and he looked sharp. I think he looked decisive. He looked, you know, the things that they've worked on him in terms with him in terms of like taking snaps under center, turning your back on a defense, going through play action, and then going through your progressions. That was definitely one thing where, you know, I was talking to some people who had evaluated Mendoza, and I, you know, we were just kind of talking about some highlights that we had seen or whatever after the first round of preseason games. And I had one guy say to me, well, you know, the funny thing is when you go back and you look at his Indiana tape, you did not see a lot of going to the third progression for him. He was very much like a 1-2 progression guy. And it was fine because, you know, he would get to his second progression and it would be open, but it did leave you wondering like what's going to happen in the NFL when he gets pressure. Is he going to drop his eyes and start to run around the pocket, which he would do at times, or is he going to stick in there, not get, you know, a little, you know, anxious in the pocket and forget to look for his third read. And he said, you know, he was getting to his third reads, but he was also protected too. That's another thing. He, you know, the protection for him in that game was pretty decent. I think he did take one hit, you know, and completed a ball where clearly he probably felt that pressure. I think Mendoza has done enough. I think he was doing enough when I went through camp, and I think he's done enough to now to make it a conversation for the Raiders about, okay, well, if we want to move up, you know, we still want to be patient, but if we want to move up the timeline on him, we could have the ability to ultimately do that. But I also think it's going to matter with wins and losses. I think they want to win games there. And I think if Cousins goes out and, you know, we'll see if something like this happens, but let's say they start 5-2, they're not going to push Mendoza back out. You know, they're going to sit on him as long as they possibly can. And that was one of the points when I talked to John Spytek, their GM, and I went through, we talked about the fact that, wow, the Chiefs, you know, they really did sit on Mahomes for, you know, a full season other than the season finale that year when they finally let him start what was a meaningless game. And, you know, Spytek's like, yeah, they won. They were in the playoff mix the whole year. He's like, you know, that's a luxury. And I think the Raiders would love that to be the luxury where they're in the mix, you know, for the postseason or pushing for it. And then they could sit on Mendoza as long as possible. I think as soon as they're out of the mix, that whole conversation changes.
All right, Charles. So we've got these dudes, you know, in the NFL who are, you know, in NFL camps, who have signed NFL contracts, who are also getting temporary restraining orders from judges so that they can, you know, return back to college football if it doesn't work out. And obviously, we've talked about it earlier in the show, like, you know, this is against NCAA rules. It doesn't matter. The judges are, again, giving them injunctions, giving them temporary restraining orders to bypass NCAA rules because it's illegal, you know, to deny, you know, in these judges' eyes to, you know, restrict the earning ability. But I think most people would look at this and say, it's just ridiculous. You can't, you're in the NFL. You can't come back to college football. College football has no answer unless they get, you know, Washington throws them a life preserver or, you know, again, they totally revamp the system and have their own CBA. But what about the NFL, Charles? How would it work? I'm just thinking about Roger Goodell looking at this saying, this is stupid. And making it so, you know, if someone were to do this, okay, well, now you're no longer eligible to play in the NFL or something like that. And the NBA has its, you know, the NFL has its rules about how long someone can come into the league. You have to be 3 years out of a high school, right?
Sure.
A certain age.
Right.
The NBA has a rule. Could something like that happen? Because I will say the NFL has been an incredible beneficiary of what college football does for it. It's an app that not one dime spent, and here's your free scouting system. Here's your free minor league system. Just show up at the stadiums. You can scout all these guys, and then you know. I mean, it is. That's what it is. It's the minor leagues of the NFL, but they don't pay a dime for it. Why can they do something to help college football?
Well, I think, okay, so it's there's two questions here. There's could they do something, and number two, do they want to do something? So, could they do something? Look, I'm not a labor lawyer. I can say that historically, obviously, you can't enter the league until you're 3 years removed from your graduating high school class. That's stood up over the test of time. And we've had guys challenge that. Obviously, Maurice Claret, you know, Mike Williams, who was a USC receiver at that time, you know, there were individuals who attempted to challenge it, and it, you know, did not work. And I think a lot of that is based on the fact that this is a business. There's a CBA in place. It's collectively bargained. You know, players have a union, and it's, you know, contract between owners and a labor union, and that's different than what exists, obviously, on the NCAA level. And again, I'm not a labor lawyer here, so I can't, you know, give me a couple of weeks, and I could probably give you the really granular, nerdy answer to this. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, how are players viewed on the college level? They're not considered labor. They don't have a union. There's no CBA in place, and so I think that opens up a lot of what you can get into in terms of the court system, you know, on the collegiate level. On the NFL level, most of these cases, I mean, they're all privately arbitrated. You know, the arbitration process is private. It goes through the collectively bargained arbitration process. It all gets pushed into that. And so I think in terms of could the NFL do something to help? Yeah, I think, you know, through, you know, collective bargaining, I'm sure there's an avenue that they could figure out if we start to have players who are going to camps, which is what you're referring to right now, you know, going through camps with NFL teams, potentially getting cut and then, you know, possibly having that door open to go then back and play out some eligibility on a college level. Could the NFL try to address that along with the union down the line? I think they could. I don't know what all the ins and outs of it would be. I think, you know, the one thing you get into is you don't want, so there's the Sherman Antitrust Act. You don't want to get into a territory where somehow you have players are saying, okay, I'm eligible to come back. Let's say I went to the NFL, I got cut in a camp, I had eligibility, I went back to the NCAA, and now I want to come back again, and now you're stopping me. I don't know if there's a lawsuit there where you can say you're restricting my right to work, and then that falls under the Antitrust Act, and then all of a sudden you're getting into the weeds there. Maybe that's the problem. But then the second thing, and
but
I'll
like you said, real quick
so
though,
the
but
NFL
like
want to.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I mean, to me, it sounds like, you know, again, these rules that they have that have been challenged, I mean, you would think it would be under the same umbrella, but go ahead.
Well, but the thing is, it's getting challenged on the collegiate end because it can get challenged on the collegiate end. I think it's much more difficult to challenge it on the NFL end because, again, it's a labor agreement. It's a workplace employment, you know, issue, and it's an agreement between a group of owners and a union and their employees. They're considered employees. They're classified as employees. That's different than what's going on the collegiate level. And I think that's why you see the challenges on the collegiate level having, you know, some success with the temporary restraining orders. I think it's kind of apples and oranges, but I do think there's a possibility certainly for the NFL to try to work it on its end. But to get to that second part, does the NFL want to? I don't think so. I don't think the NFL really has the inclination other than the age restriction because they don't want players coming in, you know, at, you know, 18, 19 years old, 1 or 2 years removed from their high school graduating class. I don't think that they're going to sit there and want to work this problem. As you said, it's been a free minor league system for a long time. And unless there is some major disruption to the NFL based on what's happening on the collegiate level, which there might be, then
it looks stupid.
They don't care about that, though.
Yeah, but it looks way more stupid for college football and obviously just in general where you can all agree, like, this is dumb. I feel like it looks kind of dumb for the NFL, though. If, like, you got guys who are in your league, I mean, this is, you know, this is a – It's a big deal to get into the NFL, to sign a contract with the NFL, and be like, yeah, you know what? I make a little more money over here. I'm going to bail out and go back to college. I don't know. I mean, I feel like public opinion on this, if it were to get to the conversation of, okay, NFL, throw a life preserver, I feel like, you know, it's something where it's like, if it's pretty painless for them, why not do it? You know, like you're helping football in general.
The interesting thing what you just said is if the NFL feels like it gets to a point where it's competing to retain its labor. So let's say you draft a guy, right? Let's say I'll bring up Quinn Ewers, right? Because Quinn Ewers was a player who certainly could have stayed an extra year in college, made some money,
made more money,
went to the draft. He ends up being a late round draft pick for Miami. Say Ewers goes, you know, it all goes the way that it went. And he's, I think he was a 6th round pick of the Dolphins. And, you're getting through camp and the Dolphins are staring at him going, you know, okay, he's not ready now, but he can certainly be our backup, or maybe even we'll carry three quarterbacks, but we see a future for him. It'll just take us a couple years to get there, but we're happy with this, and we've spent a sixth-round pick on him. I think if you're halfway through camp and Quinn Ewers goes, man, I'm just going to be a backup here, or you know, I might only be the third quarterback, and Oregon is still calling me, you know, I'm going to go back. I'm just going to bounce, and I'm going to go to Oregon and you know, take up that last year of eligibility and the money that Oregon has on the table. If that were to happen, then I think the NFL is sitting there going, wait a minute, we're drafting guys into our league, and now we have to compete to keep guys that we've spent a draft pick on because they are willingly leaving. We're not cutting them, and then they're going back. They're willingly. Like, if you get to a point where you have players who don't want to be backups or saying, hey, I'm a sixth or seventh round pick. I can help on special teams, but I really would rather go back and make a couple million dollars.
Yeah, Texas A&M is going to pay me $2 million.
That's a different conversation. I think if the NFL feels like it's competing to keep its labor after that labor's been drafted into the league and the players are the ones that are driving the motivation behind this, they're like, hey, I'm only half in and half out. Like, I got drafted way later than I thought. You know, like, what if it had happened with Shadur? You know, Shadur goes in the fifth round of the Browns, and he's like, what? Like, nah, I can definitely go back and make, you know, maybe somebody will pay me $10 million to play, you know, and the Browns drafted him to potentially look at him as an asset that they got deeper in the draft because of other things. Like, oh, geez, we got a guy in the fifth that we feel like we could have gotten in the second or the third. Yeah, they would have a problem with that, certainly. There's no doubt. If they thought he was a functional, you know, developable player, that's a different conversation. So, if that happens, then I think you're going to see the NFL's going to say, all right, we got to work this on our end of this because we can't have teams drafting players. And then all of a sudden, or, I mean, it's feasible too that you have undrafted players, undrafted rookie free agents who are in camps and have a really good camp. And then all of a sudden, well, I'll give you one, like Michael Trigg, right? In Dallas. Undrafted free agent out of Baylor, went through three different programs, you know, had all kinds of maturity stuff tied to him, so he ends up not getting drafted. He probably would have been like a mid-round pick if he didn't have all the kind of potential character red flags. Well, Triggs had a pretty good camp for the Cowboys. Looks like he could make their 53-man roster. If a college program came to him now and said, hey, you know, you're going to make the roster there, but, you know, you're probably going to be the third tight end. Come here, we'll pay you $5 million this year, whatever. I'm just throwing a number out. And Trigg was like, yeah, I'm going to go for the money. I guarantee you the Cowboys have a significant problem with that. So, you know, even if it's undrafted guys, if it's teams don't want to lose players that they know can help them. So you don't want a situation where potential rookie backups might be vying for college money. That hasn't happened right yet. It could happen. I think anything's on the table nowadays. And if it does, then I think the NFL takes a completely different track on this. But I understand the sentiment, Joe. I just think the NFL also looks at college and says, that's a mess, and we're not in charge of that mess. We're in charge of our own mess. We have our own problems. We don't want to also clean up what – and I know, Joe, you call it a free minor league system. The NFL looks at college and says – you know, made a lot of money, you know, for years and years and years. And our rule of not allowing players to come into the league until after the third, you know, their third year departing their high school class has actually helped you retain a lot of talent, make a lot of money over a lot of years. So why do we need to help you with more of this?
It's a good question. So Charles, last thing for you. At age 37, what do you think Von Miller is bringing to the Dallas Cowboys?
15 snaps a game, maybe 20, you know. I think the way I look at it is, remember Dwight Freeney when he caught on with the Falcons late in his NFL career, and he was part of, unless I'm losing my mind, because I'm picturing myself in the locker room talking to Dwight Freeney that year they made the Super Bowl, and lost to the Patriots. But, you know, Dwight Freeney caught on with the Falcons late in his career, and he was a good, very good player for them. Like, he gave them, you know, a solid rotation of snaps. He was really good in the locker room. I think he helped some of their other young pass rushers kind of, you know, maybe understand some ins and outs of things that only he could bring to the table because he was the level of player that he is. I think Miller's the same thing for the Cowboys. I think he's certainly not going to be the, you know, heavy usage player that he's been earlier in his career. And I think, you know, they've been already pretty open about that. So I think he's a good rotational piece for them. I think you'll see, you know, he'll be a guy who's capable of getting, you know, 6, 7, 8, you know, maybe 10 sacks this season in that rotational role, but he's not going to be, you know, the staple Von Miller player we've seen in the past. It's valuable, though, I think, to the Cowboys. And that defense and Christian Parker, their new defensive coordinator, the switch to the 3-4, a lot of the changes that they've made with personnel, bringing in, you know, Caleb Downs obviously drafted, Jay Sean Barham, the kid they drafted out of Michigan that they're probably going to use in a lot of different ways. You know, Rashawn Gary, getting Quinn Williams under a long-term contract, you can see the changes that they've made to make that defense much, much better. I think it's going to be the Cowboys have a chance. I think if that defense plays to where I think it could, which they would like top half of the league. So we're talking like 15, 16. I think they could be top 10 if it really comes together with the talent that they have there. And if that happens, I think Cowboys are going to be a pretty good team this year.
Charles, awesome stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this week. Enjoy the final week of the training camp tour coming up. You're almost there, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right. Sounds good, guys. I'll talk to you. I'll be off the road officially when we talk again. So
all right.
I'm excited about that.
There we go. All right. Very nice. Charles Robinson from NFLBlueBook.com, our guest here on the program. Lots to react to there from Charles. We'll do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Hang out with us on Friday, August the 28th at T-Line in West Nashville as we celebrate 102.5 The Game's 15th year of being on the air. Also, we got gifts for you, the listeners, every hour starting at 6 a.m. Listen for a chance to win Preds tickets, Vandy tickets, concert tickets, and a whole lot more. Plus, be sure to stop by T-Line and get signed up for a chance to win Nashville Predators season tickets as well. For more information, visit thegamenashville.com/birthday. Looking forward to that coming up next week. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. We welcome your thoughts at 615-737-1025. By the way, real quickly, people have been asking about this. The Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League, the 2026 Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League. We will give away our first spot in that league tomorrow. So tomorrow on the show, our first spot in the 2026 Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League will be given away. We do not have a returning member of the league from our listeners because Ian Safar won the championship last year. Yeah, so it's a brand new league. Brand new out there. So look forward to that.
Brand new. Kaharski is wussed out, so he can't hang with the big boys. He can't hang with the big dogs.
It's been proven.
He's going to have to play in some, you know, like subscribers to PaulKaharski.com who are sycophants who let him win or something like that. And Brennan Rexroad will be part of the league again. Brennan Rexroad, who, by the way, beat me 2-1 yesterday in full court one-on-one games, which I guess means he finally, as a near 19-year-old against his 50-something dad, finally beats me when I've been dominating the entire time. But congrats to him.
I don't know if that was a very sincere compliment, but.
Well, it's just reality. I mean, we had, you know, I beat him the first game 11-8, beat me the second game 12-10. Third game was tied 10-all, and I said, Brennan, if I beat you, I want you to know I had the ball at this point. I said, I want you to know that there will not be any other topics on the radio program tomorrow. Yeah. This will be the only topic on the radio program tomorrow if I beat you. But, of course, I shouldn't have talked trash, and it was 10-all, and he ended up hitting a mid-range to beat me 12-10.
Tough one there.
I know everybody was really just begging to hear about this.
Yeah. We got some preseason action tonight in the NFL. You got the Raiders and the Texans tonight, the Niners and the Chargers. How closely will you be watching a little Fernando Mendoza action tonight?
Well, like Charles essentially suggesting that Mendoza is maybe causing a rethink in there. So, yeah, I'm interested to watch some Mendoza. I'm interested to watch some Mendoza and see how he plays. I mean, obviously, I, you know, for my
Can they interview him while he's playing?
A mic'd up on him would be. Would that be awesome? Yes, oh, my God, that was an amazing route that you just ran. Do you know how good that route was? Remember when we worked on that last Thursday?
Look how big this human is. It's going to blitz over here. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's something else. Like, I'd like to see Cousins have, you know, be able to have some success and have some starts and all that stuff, but if Mendoza's going to play well, like really well and be sharp right away, and you know, like Charles said, like are they going to win with Cousins? You know, are they – like it may not be too long. Also, people in this town watch Mendoza and, oh, there's the last number one pick.
Yep.
But let's also remember – actually, you remind me. I don't know. Did Cam have good preseason game performances last year? I don't remember.
I don't think he played a ton, right? I don't remember anything that stands out. So, to answer your question, I have no idea.
Like, I don't remember a lot of things. So, that's the whole thing.
There are very few preseason memories in my life that stand out to me. There's a couple. Like, I remember the Titans turning around and handing the ball off to Chris Johnson one time in preseason game. I was like, good grief, look at that guy.
Yeah.
I remember they played Mahomes before Mahomes was the starting quarterback, and he rolled out to his right, and he threw a ball on the run about 55 yards down the field, and I was like, who is this kid at quarterback? Turns out he's pretty good.
Yeah.
So very rarely you'll have some moments in the preseason that I remember, but I don't remember much from Cam last year.
Yeah, because I feel like that the reaction to the first performance, which again, it was bad. I feel like it's something we might remember next year, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe.
Because I don't remember last year, so it's like, yeah, he didn't play much.
Well, I think it's going to probably depend entirely on how the rest of this year goes. If he plays well throughout the year, then we probably won't. If it's not good, we'll probably look back and say, yeah, there was a sign in the first preseason game that this may not go very well.
That's true. So if Mendoza's awesome tonight, like that, I get it. I get why a Titans fan would be like, oh, you know, exasperated by that. But let's also, like, the reaction of, like, you know, Curtis Rourke, another Indiana quarterback, you know, Curtis Rourke is just way better than Cam Ward. It's like, well, let's remember who he's playing against. I understand Cam was also playing, but preseason, man. It's not game planned. It's just, it is, you have to, it's not, I know it's game conditions, but like it's really not game conditions. It's tackling and all that stuff and you're running plays, but it's just, you know, if you have a good OC, and I think the Titans do have one, that might make a big difference for a Cam Ward in an actual game against an opponent that where you're actually trying to isolate certain matchups and you're actually, you know, you have a plan to try to win the football game. That is different.
You want to see this headline from the San Francisco Chronicle from yesterday?
Uh-oh.
Curtis Rourke's dazzling 49ers debut could open door to a Mac Jones trade. That's the headline at the San Francisco Chronicle from yesterday.
Interesting. That's by the way, I mean, that applies to the Titans too, because there's a guy who people actually would like to trade for as a backup quarterback, potentially, right?
Mac Jones?
Yeah. I think Mac Jones is at the very least like an attractive QB too.
For sure. Especially because he's now been in the Shanahan system.
That is true.
I mean, in all seriousness, like I know we kind of look at Darnold and he went to Minnesota and it took off, but the stop he was before that was San Francisco and it seems to have worked out pretty well.
And I'm quite sure that the first I heard of, like, man, Darnold looks really good was Charles on our show, right?
Yes.
I think it was. It was like Darnold, like they're like Darnold's a dude. And so yeah, it's like the ultimate car wash for the quarterback. Go play for Shanahan for a little bit.
Floyd on the YouTube chat says he was at practice yesterday. Levis looked pretty good to him. Cam is smaller than he realized. Apparently Levis looking good to Floyd yesterday at practice.
Yeah, no, I think Levis had a good day for, you know, for whatever that's worth. So that's good. Interesting take on Cam. He's not huge. Yeah, I mean, Cam's like, what is he officially? 6'1"? 6'2"?
I don't think he's even 6'1". Let's see here. Let's find his official listing. He's officially listed at 6'2", 219.
Yeah. No, he's on the smaller end. He's not a towering quarterback. Now, if you stand him next to Kyler Murray, then
yeah,
he looks huge. But
well, they said he's lost 15 pounds this year, right?
You can see that.
You can see that, yeah.
I think you can do it, and that's good. I mean, that should be good. Got to move better, man. Got to be able to move better, even as a game manager. Got to move better.
615-737-1025. More coming up in reaction to Charles. We'll wrap up the show coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Outdoor patios, landscaping design, lawn maintenance, and more. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Open the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Retro just showed me a very interesting graphic that the Titans kind of illustrates the company they've kept over the last few years.
Thanks, yeah, thanks to Matt at Steeler Vol for life, a Steelers and Vols fan for life. Yeah, this is where Twitter still has some value. He sent me this graphic that I guess they just showed on ESPN. Wins since February of 2022. By the way, that's when the Titans traded A.J. Brown. Scottie Scheffler, 21. Northwestern football, 20. Boston College football, Arizona Cardinals, Tennessee Titans, 19.
Oh, boy.
And by the way, and I think this is accurate, then a response to that, you know, that was 2022. So we're counting their seven wins for that year when they started 7-3. We're counting those, right? So since the end of that, right, so they're 12-46 in their last 58.
Yeah.
So Kaharski put 9-35 on his website on his 30-year thing. But that's discounting a 3-11 stretch before that to be 12-46, which to me means what we've concluded is that Paul Kaharski is running propaganda for the Titans.
Yes, I would agree.
Trying to make it seem not quite as bad as it was.
It's also objectively amazing how in that time period, Scottie Scheffler has become a golfing icon and the Titans can have not won 20 games in that time period.
And they
play 17 a year!
Oh, my goodness. What company you're keeping, Tennessee Titans? Also, Steve said the combine height for Cam, the official, which is real, is 6'1 and 5'8. That sounds right. I mean, like, yeah.
So they're rounding up a little bit.
Yeah, a shade under 6'2 is right. He's not, he doesn't come off smallish, but obviously he's not one of these 6'5 monsters.
Austin Mock at The Athletic has come out with his NFL projection model, which this came out yesterday. You know, for years, Kansas City dominated the AFC. Before that, it was New England. And apparently this year, like in the AFC, wide open, according to Austin Mock's projection here. So, you know, they factor in a bunch of things in this projection model. There's no team in the AFC, according to his model, that is projected to reach 11 wins. Now, I know that will not end up being the case.
No.
And there will be some teams that reach 11, 12 wins in those neighborhoods. The Ravens top the list at 10.9, so they're right there on the verge of it, followed by the Bills and the Patriots and the Bengals. Those are your top four in the AFC. The Titans coming in at 13th in this model in the AFC at 5.8 wins via projection. Only three teams in the AFC worse, the Jets, the Browns, and the Malik Willis-led Miami Dolphins, bringing up the rear down there at number 16.
Okay, so fourth worst in the AFC and just behind the Raiders. There's a big cutoff, too. Like 12 through 16 is Raiders to Dolphins, and that's a 6-2 to 4-5. From Raiders up to 11 with the Colts. Colts are 8.2,
yep,
which is part of this projection. And I do, as I look at the AFC, I do see a lot of what appear to be good teams, but who are the great teams?
Right.
Will the Ravens put it together with a new coach? Will the Bills put it together with a new coach? Are the Chiefs, what are the Chiefs now?
Are the Bills going to be able to, like, stand on their field with how bad apparently the grass is at the new stadium?
There's that,
and
too.
And if they do, can anybody see them play in the new stadium? And there's a bunch of questions there.
Right. Like, will the Patriots fade despite the coaching of the Big Row? You know, will the Big Row keep them from fading or not? I mean, I don't know. We're going to have to find out. Titans, we got to get that trending.
Will there be fewer maybe news leaks from the Patriots this year, you think? Just fewer stories getting broken out there?
They could be that, too.
Okay.
They could be.
Just checking.
Or could come out in a different place. Yeah, who knows?
Good. Yeah, good.
Titans, though, so that 5-8 also for Austin Mock includes a 14.7% chance of making the playoffs.
Good to know.
That's about what I probably – yeah, that seems about right, right? About 10 to 15% chance.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
There we go.
Where do they got the Dolphins at? 6.9.
Dang, man.
Okay.
6.9. Nice.
0.3% chance for the Super Bowl, according to this model for the Titans.
Yeah, so up to, I mean, the Super Bowl odds are like the highest are the Ravens at 7.4, but I love that the Dolphins are minus, less than 0.1%. Boy, not loving the Dolphins out there. It's just
not a
tough
lot of faith in Malik.
Who's
he supposed to throw the ball
to?
Well,
that's the thing. It's like, here's your big opportunity, Malik. And here's
Hand the ball off to Achane.
Here's a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, that's true.
About all he's got.
Yeah. It's too bad. I'd love to see.
He looked pretty good in his first preseason game.
I'd love to see him, because that would be just a great example for everybody again of like,
yeah,
you can be something in a couple of years, and then in year three, if some people can actually get way better year three, year four, you know, it'd be fun to see.
I'd like to see it from his perspective. Seems like a good dude, so I hope good things happen to him.
Right.
I don't particularly want to have the combination of Cam Ward struggling and Malik Willis doing well as a starting quarterback in the NFL together at the same time for the mental well-being of Titans fans.
That is fair.
They've been through enough. I don't know that I need to see more of that.
Yeah. Well, and then just wait till Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, and then the Jags trade for Will Levis,
yeah,
and Billy Jeans goes down there and just takes over Duval. Add that to the mix.
You know, it may not be a bad spot for him. Everybody makes the Liam Cohen connection, but I feel like Levis could thrive in the Milky Pool too. You know,
can you,
Florida man?
How milky would the mayo turn that pool?
Pretty milky.
If you're slathered in that mayo cologne, how milky would the pool become?
Be pretty gross, I think.
You know, Ian's like, okay, I'll save that one. Slathered.
Levis does have a good Florida man feel to him. A little bit, actually.
Got to take advantage of it this year too. Because is it next year they're in Orlando? I think it's next year.
I think that's right.
Okay. Probably not a Milky Pool there.
No, that stadium. It's kind of a crappy stadium, but they definitely do not have a Milky Pool. Covered a lot of bad bowl games in that one.
Enjoy the preseason tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Adam Sparks and Teron Davenport on the show with us tomorrow. Next Man Up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.